yes, I'm the great pretender. Pretending that I'm doing well. My need is such, I pretend too much. I'm lonely, but no one can tell.
That goes out to the Kansas City Chiefs, because that's what they are. The great.
Didn't know where you were going with that one, because you could talk that about a few teams this weekend.
True, but the Chiefs are the perfect example.
Exactly.
They are the great pretender. And let's hear from Andy Reid on the loss to the Giants yesterday.
A small margin between winning and losing in this league. We found that out. You had three turnovers, and that's my responsibility to make sure those things don't happen. And so we got to make sure we take care of business, penalties, turnovers. You can't do that against a team like the Giants. They capitalize on them.
But they didn't. They didn't. They scored one touchdown and two field goals. How did they really capitalize on all three of those turnovers?
Well,
can somebody explain that to me?
All the turnovers.
Yeah, but they scored 12 points.
I know.
If your offense can't score more than 12 points, you can't put this game on the defense.
Oh, no.
You can't.
No.
It was just like the Steeler playoff game last year, honestly. Except, and it very much was similar, except the Giants are much worse than the Steelers were a year ago. At least the Steelers are a decent team that beat them at Arrowhead in the playoffs. This was, the Giants dropped passes. They had unsportsmanlike penalties. The Giants weren't even, it didn't even look like they wanted to win.
No.
And the Chiefs this loss is worse than the loss to the Raiders a few years ago.
Oh, yeah.
On a Thursday night. This loss is worse.
They at least showed a pulse at times offensively in that game against the Raiders. I mean, I know it was terrible, and the defense wasn't good in that game. I saw a Fire Bob Sutton hashtag on Twitter yesterday in the third quarter, and I'm like, based on this game? Like, today?
Yeah.
Like, what's the defense done wrong at all in this game, really? I mean,
The defense held them to nine points, really, because Alex Smith gift-wrapped a field goal late in the game.
Yeah.
So that you can't put on the defense. I mean, it's all about the offense. We'll talk more about the Chiefs. We're going to save that for a little bit later because we want to get to the KU-Baker Mayfield situation, K-State's big win at Stillwater. But we're going to begin with state football. Smith Center, how about that? Wow. 51-0 over Plainville. You know, I thought they would win comfortably, but not quite that much. And now they get Colgan the state championship this Saturday in Class 2-1A at Hayes at 7 o'clock because Fort Hays State is going to have their playoff game against Ferris State during the afternoon. And Northwest Missouri State got knocked off. Two-time defending champion as a sixth seed lost 21-18 to Ashland, Ohio. So Fort Hays State is the lone representative left from the MIAA. And I think that opens up things a little bit for Fort Hays State, to be quite honest with you. I think they could win a national championship. They're legit. But will they be a little bit nervous after not, having a week off? Does that break up their momentum and, things like that? Ferris State's got a playoff game under their belt, and this is a new territory for the Fort Hays State football team.
Exactly.
And being at home, will they wilt under the pressure? Can they handle the nerves? But a big opportunity for Fort Hays State coming up this weekend against Ferris State. So a doubleheader for Hays folks, or if you are a high school fan with Smith Center, Pittsburgh Colgan, or any high school fan from the area and want to watch football, you can go down and catch Fort Hays State's playoff game and get a doubleheader.
Yep.
Get the 2-1A state title that night. Hanover proved too much for Pike Valley. To me, it sounds like it was simple. Pike Valley played one for a while, but it's four quarters. And so far, nobody's been able to play four quarters with Hanover.
Yeah.
Four good quarters. So Hanover's going to play Hodgman County in the championship.
Yep.
Pike Valley ends their year with 11-1, is that
yep.
right? Terrific year. Smith Center's 11-1, and they're going for the championship. Best of luck to Coach Sass and his crew this weekend in Hayes. And then St. Paul knocked off Burlingame. St. Paul is going to take on
Hoxie.
Yep. In the other eight-man title game. And then Class 3A, Marysville, certainly surprising me, knocking off Phillipsburg,
yeah.
although Phillipsburg did not have their starting quarterback. And Marysville wins 30-24. And Sabetha surprised me, beating Silver Lake 17-14. They're 50 miles apart. I don't know why they just meet in Seneca and play. That's a halfway mark. They haven't played football for a long time, but they usually play each other in basketball. And so that's going to be – it's the first time since, I think, 09 – that there's no Rossville or Silver Lake in the state championship game in 3A. So.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure that was Marysville, too. Like,
yeah, it was. They played collegiate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was right. Collegiate won in a close
yeah,
game.
Yeah, I was actually at that game. That mm-hmm. was a fun game.
That was. And then the 4A Division II title, that's Frontenac against?
Frontenac against Holcomb.
Against Holcomb.
Yep.
And those two both look pretty good in their state semifinals. The rest of the state brackets are available at nckesports.com, and then we'll start basketball locker room chats next week for basketball, and then next Friday we'll have high school hoops, December the 1st. Boom, just like that.
Yep.
So we just go from one season to the next. All right. I want to begin with the debacle that we can call KU football. I want to begin there because I wasn't planning. You know, sometimes I pre-plan the show from the standpoint of, in my head, what's going to be the talking points for Monday after a busy weekend? I figure if there's upsets in top 25 football, that's going to be a talking point. The Chiefs, if they get upset and they lose, that'd be a talking point, which they did. But I'm not expecting K-State to win. That normally would have been what I led off with today on the show. KU Oklahoma, I would have never dreamt I'd spend more than about 60 seconds on this game. But thanks to the classlessness, and that's what I'm going to call it, I want to thank the KU football team, or should I say their captains. I want to thank their captains, and I want to thank Baker Mayfield for showing all of my children and children everywhere how not to be a class act. I want to thank them for giving me a great example of showing what acting like a butthead is like. And I have a stronger word for it, but I can't repeat it on the radio. It's ridiculous. And that word doesn't even do it justice. And then to hear what these players said after the game for KU and Baker Mayfield is interesting. I want to start with David Beatty. David Beatty supposedly is going to be back next year. Chancellor gave him the ringing endorsement along with Shane Zinger that they'll be back next year. He could change his mind. The chancellor could change his mind, and maybe this could cause him to change his mind. Tom Keegan of Lawrence Journal World is saying this is a great opportunity for the chancellor to say, hey, I've changed my mind after this. Lack of sportsmanship, lack of discipline. I don't think it shines too brightly on David Beatty. Let's start with David Beatty. First of all, let's just talk about the game for about 25 seconds. David Beatty, about the OU loss.
Well, I mean, they were fired up all week. They were ready for this opportunity. Certainly no disrespect to Oklahoma. It just was, it's a great opportunity to have a team of that caliber to come in, and you just get to see where you're at, right? And, you know, we didn't finish the game good enough. I mean, that score's not good enough. Those guys are mad. They're upset. I'm mad. I'm upset because I just know that we're a better football team than what that score shows. And that bothers me. It bothers them. I think we're a better football team than that.
Okay. Now, KU lost 41-3.
Score was about what I thought it would be. So
spread was 38.5. They covered the spread. So they actually played better than they probably are. 41-3 was the final. And that's it in regards to the football game. Now let's talk about the antics. Let's begin with what started this. Joe Dineen, who is having a wonderful year, he's one of the few bright spots on this Kansas football team defensively. He and the captains, few players, teammates of his, apparently kind of the tunnel leading out to the game, were trying to come up with a way to get themselves motivated and fired up and try to get a mental edge. And what they came up with was, let's not shake the hands of the captains at midfield for the pregame toss ceremony. We're not going to shake hands. What happened was Baker Mayfield was the first one to extend his hand to shake the captain's hands for KU. And the KU players just looked down, ignored Baker and the OU captains, put their hands behind their back as if they were handcuffed, and did not shake hands with Baker Mayfield or the OU captains. And Baker then obviously was fired up right away. You know, he's pretty emotional if you haven't paid attention to college football. And then they asked, Oklahoma won the toss, and they asked Baker what they won, and he goes, I don't care. Heads. Because Baker, you knew, was fired up right then and there. So that's what got things kickstarted. So let's start from the KU perspective with Joe Dineen, KU defensive player, best defensive player on this team this year, tries to explain or does explain what happened in regards to the not shaking the hands of Baker Mayfield and Oklahoma players at the midfield stripe for the pregame coin toss.
It wasn't an attack on him personally at all. I respect him as he's obviously a great player. It was more for us personally to kind of put our foot down and try and get a little bit fired up for the game and let him know that that we're here, and we're not just going to back down because you're Oklahoma and you're the number 3 or 4 ranked team. But it really wasn't anything personal against Oklahoma. It was more personal for us to get motivated and ready to go.
So if any of the other players from Oklahoma had tried to shake your hands, would the same thing with that?
Yeah, we wouldn't. No, it just happened that Baker was the first one to reach his hand out. If it was any of the other captains, we would have turned it down. I think that went into it, is maybe trying to get in his head a little bit, let him maybe fire him up too much. And for the first quarter, I think it worked out in our favor, but obviously he's a great player and he made some plays down the stretch. Yeah, I think so. I think, trash talk and stuff like that's a part of the game. And if he thought that was necessary to do, then whatever, you know, I mean, that doesn't like hurt my feelings or anything like that. If a guy says F you to me, and I'll brush it off. It's happened before. It's nothing really.
Was he John with players or coaches or everybody? Or
I think everybody. I think everybody. But that's just kind of how he is. He's a talker. We knew that going in. And our goal is just kind of get him rattled a little bit, get him maybe out of his comfort zone, stuff like that. I guess if I got to explain like why I feel like it would be a little bit better. Obviously on the video it looks pretty bad, but it also looks like it's a personal attack on Baker, which if I got to go back and explain like why we were doing that like I am now, then I think it would be a little bit more understandable. But it looks pretty bad, but I mean it happened, so it is what it is.
It is what it is. All right. Did you hear an apology anywhere during that 2.5 minutes? There was no apology.
The interesting part of all that is, like, he says it's not an attack on Baker, but in the middle of all that, he's like, we were trying to get under his skin. Not their skin, his skin.
Mm-hmm. He also said maybe get him too fired up.
Get him too fired up, exactly.
That's the great game plan, Kansas. Great game plan. If that's what you resort to in order to win a football game, then your program is a dumpster fire and beyond. All right. So Joe Dineen's a young guy, all right? He was kind of laughing during half of this thing. I think some of the key players enjoy the fact that people aren't talking about their play on the field. Maybe that's why they really did it. They knew they were going to get their butts kicked, and this would be distracting. So let's hear from David Beatty. Joe Dineen is a young guy who did not apologize during that at all. So I'm sure David Beatty will take the high road here, and he'll go ahead and apologize for his team, right?
I'm proud of our guys for getting to a point, and not just, we're not going to take it anymore. You're going to stick your feet in the ground. You're going to bend the grass. I think we got to display it better than that, obviously. But I get it. I understand where they're coming from. I've got to do a better job as their coach, maybe teaching them how to manage that a little bit better. But I think maybe when you get a chance to ask some of those guys, they'll tell you where it came from. But from our standpoint, we got to talk about how we want to handle ourselves when it comes to those type of things. But I'll tell you this, I got a classy bunch of kids in there that care about doing things right, and they want to represent, you know, this university well. So we'll move forward and we'll make sure that we do that as we do it. But I certainly don't think it was anything more than the fact that this is a football game. It's a football game. So we're going to defend our grass. And from that standpoint, I think it helped us. We were ready to go.
Okay. No apology from the head coach. No apology from the KU players. And somewhere in there he says he has classy players. Baloney. If you have, and here's the thing, if Joe Dineen or a few of the captains, this is the bad thing and what they really did here. You make it to where everybody thinks the KU football team is classless. And I'll bet you 95% of the members of that football team are classy. But those few players took it in their hands to decide, this is the way we're going to get in Oklahoma's head and beat them, is by not shaking their hands at midfield where the cameras are on a national televised game, and you care about the university, you brought on negative publicity, which is beyond what you ever thought you could. Like, some KU fans would say, you know what, we're losing, we're getting beat. Well, at least we have some class. They don't have that to stand on now. because of a few young players deciding to do this. And then on top of that, their coach condones it. There was nowhere in that thing where Coach Beatty even was close to being sorry.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if KU's the same as K-State, but if they are, then your other 95% that you're talking about, vote those players to be their representatives as captains.
Yes.
So what does that say about who you voted for to be your captains? Those are the faces of your team that go out to the middle of the field for that coin toss.
Yes.
As your captains. They're supposed to represent what you stand for, whether the other 95% of your team is full of class. The guys that go out in the center of the field represent what you stand for when you go out for the coin toss, because you voted those guys to be your leaders.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Excellent point. So what happens after that? Well, you know, the perfect thing to do is, you know, one wrong, add another wrong, and that makes it a right, right? Two wrongs make a right. Isn't that what I've heard before?
Yeah.
Oh, no, wait a minute. Two wrongs don't make a right.
They don't.
Oh, okay. So then Baker Mayfield, he gets all fired up. And after he throws a touchdown pass, and Oklahoma's up 28-3, and come on, Baker knew that KU had no chance of winning this game. And Joe Denis might be right. Maybe they got Oklahoma a little bit rattled. It was only 7-3 at the end of the first, so KU had a chance, I guess. And Baker Mayfield starts to act like he's 10, 11, 12, 13. And that's not even fair to 10, 11, 12, 13-year-old kids out there. My son's 11. He knows not to do that. Baker Mayfield grabbed his crotch multiple times. He shouted out F-bombs at the KU bench after the touchdown from the sideline, all caught on camera. He did have a pretty good line when he turned to the KU faithful and said something about, you know, basically stick the basketball. You know,
You have one win, stick the basketball.
It was a pretty good burn.
That's the only thing I didn't really have a problem with on Saturday.
No, I don't either.
The rest of it was definitely
KU resorted to desperate tactics because they knew they had no chance whatsoever of winning the game. And Baker Mayfield maybe was too fired up for a quarter, but he's too good of a player not to play well for four quarters, especially against a bad KU team. And then Baker went too far. There's no question Baker went too far. And so let's hear from David Beatty about Mayfield's antics, which, by the way, there's some people saying, well, this is going to cost Baker the Heisman. All the people saying that, you're clueless. Because if the Heisman really was about character, Johnny Manziel would have never won the award. So character doesn't have a lot
Jameis
to do.
Jameis might not have won
it. Jameis Winston might not have won it. The character thing, that bus has left, that train has left the station.
Oh, yeah.
All right? The Heisman is not about character at all. They can say it is. They can put it in their bylaws and describe the Heisman, but it's not. Baker Mayfield didn't hurt his chances of winning the Heisman, I don't think. Did he lose a few voters because of his antics? Yeah, maybe. He's right now, if Oklahoma goes to the college football playoff, he will be your Heisman Trophy winner, more than likely, unless he does something really worse than what he did. So let's hear from David Beatty on Baker Mayfield's antics, his crotch grabbing, his shouting the profanities at the KU bench. I do repeat, two wrongs don't make a right, but let's remember KU is the ones that started this by refusing to shake Baker Mayfield's hand at midfield. Not condoning what Baker did. Trust me, not condoning it. I think Baker and the KU football team acted like a bunch of classless babies, all right? That's what I think. Just grow up a little bit. I know these guys are 18, 19, 20, 21, 22-year-old young adults or teenagers. But if my 11-year-old knows not to do what these guys did, shame on you. Shame on the KU football captains. Shame on Baker Mayfield. But there is a difference between Baker Mayfield and the KU football captains. I will describe that or point that out here in just a moment. Let's hear from David Beatty about Baker Mayfield's antics on the sideline.
I mean, I saw him, but he's a competitor. And, I mean, guys do what they do. I'm not sure exactly what took place. He's not my player, so it's not my job to manage him. It's my job to get our guys to where they stop them where maybe a guy doesn't have that opportunity to do that, you know. I don't control him. He's a terrific player. I know that. I tell you what, I haven't seen any better. I really have. That guy's a really, really good football player. He really is. I'm not sure what he said, but I know Coach Riley. He's a classy guy. He'll manage it.
Okay, so that is Beatty's take on Mayfield. So let's get this straight. KU didn't shake hands at midfield before the game. We've heard from Joe Denean, the guy that kind of led that movement. He did not apologize, had 3 minutes with the media, never once apologized. Didn't say anything about Well, I'm sorry for young people out there. I know that doesn't look good. Lack of sportsmanship. Didn't apologize.
Especially the two kids that were right there.
There were two kids right there next to him at the coin toss. For KU, by the way.
Yeah.
And they did that in front of those kids. That's just super great. And hence sarcasm. David Beatty didn't apologize. Joe Dineen didn't apologize. Two of the other captains weren't available to the media after the game to talk about it, which is convenient. But at least Joe Dineen talked about it. Thought it was kind of a joke and laughed it off, because that's what KU season's become, a joke. But at least one guy was a little bit different. And that's the guy that a lot of people want to focus on. Whether you think this is sincere or not, if you think it's scripted or not, that's fine. But there is a big difference between the KU football team and what they did and Baker Mayfield. Was Baker's more profane? No question. Was he wrong? Absolutely. But at least one side of this whole situation on Saturday at least had the guts to apologize.
I got caught up in a competitive game, chippy game, but what I did today, tonight, was unacceptable. I am a competitive player, but that's what I did was unacceptable, and so I apologize. It's disrespectful. It's not the example I want to set. It's not the legacy I want to leave at OU. It's not. So I truly do apologize. It's, you know, think about the kids that are watching. It's not something I want to do. So to the parents out there, I'm sorry. It's not the, you know, anything that you want your kids to watch or to have a role model. So I really do apologize from the bottom of my heart. And that's, you know, on top of everything else, it's not to take away from a good team win. So, I mean, I've always been a team guy, so actions like that don't reflect on how I feel about the team. So it's, I'm sorry for a lot of things to the Sooner fans that didn't lead us by example the right way. So I apologize not just to the Kansas people, but also our Sooner fans that I, you know, they'll have to answer questions for me now. So I apologize, but I really do mean that with everything I have, and I hope, no disrespect to any of the Kansas Athletics. It was a chippy game, but it's football, so I can't get caught up in it. And with the position I'm in, I have to be the one to lead by example, and I did not do that. So that being said, like I said again, we had a good win, but it's not about me. That's not what this press conference should be about. We had guys that played well. We had a defense that played great tonight.
You know, I don't know if that was – he didn't – if you see the video, he's not reading off a piece of paper. So I don't think it was scripted.
Yeah.
I think Baker Mayfield is contrite. I do believe that he's sorry. But I will say that this isn't the first time Baker's acted like a jerk or an idiot, if you want to use that term. He obviously did some dumb things during the offseason that got him in trouble. So he's had some issues off the field. He's had some issues on the field. He's a trash talker. KU knew that. You heard from Joe Dineen.
Yeah.
I mean, he said one game, we're your daddy, and then Baylor almost beat him. He, of course, planted the flag in midfield against Ohio State, which I really didn't have a major problem with that myself because he was disrespected from the year before. Although, once again, two wrongs don't make a right. But I will give him credit that he apologized. And he did bring up young people and being a role model, and KU did not do that. So in my book, not that I'm keeping score, but I think what Baker did looked worse, certainly, than what KU did. But how it was handled after the game, Baker gets A's and KU gets F's. And John sent a message on Facebook, which I agree with him. He says, why didn't they say they were wrong or we're sorry? He's talking about KU. I just don't understand it at all. And with two little kids standing right there at midfield during the coin toss, it's infuriating. They can still solve this if they'll come out and issue a very aggressive, formal, public apology. I agree. It is not too late to apologize if you're KU. It still doesn't look good that you wait all the way till Monday to apologize. Lincoln Riley found out what Baker Mayfield did, and he told Baker. And Lincoln Riley issued his statement after the game and said, I don't know why KU didn't shake our hands. They obviously wanted to get into our heads. They obviously had it in for Baker. There was the blatant late hit to the head by Hassan Defense for KU. It was like headhunting. And KU looked like an undisciplined team. They looked like the Chiefs on that Monday night game back in the 90s where they got a whole bunch of personal foul penalties where Derek Thomas, Neil Smith, and all these guys lost their cool. And that was the year they had Chester McLaughlin on the team. And Marty had lost control of the team. That was the story the very next day. Marty had lost control of that Chiefs football team. The expectations were high, and they had a bad year, and they were frustrated. And it was embarrassment on Monday Night Football in front of millions of people. David Beatty, I am not very... if you're a KU fan, if you're an OU fan, you're probably brushing off Baker, and you probably really love the apology, and you don't think it's as big a deal because you're a big Baker Mayfield fan. And I get that. I think most of those people know deep down what Baker did was embarrassing to the university and should never be condoned. If you're a fan of Kansas, and I'm not talking Kansas football, if you are a donor, if you are a booster, if you are simply an alum, if you're an alum of the University of Kansas, or if you're just a fan of the University of Kansas, if you send your child to the University of Kansas, you should be demanding an apology from the Kansas football team. Am I too strong here?
No.
Because I'm going to say this. It's one thing to not be very good on the football field. You try. You do your best. We know KU's shorthanded. They don't have the full scholarships. Brian Haney mentioned that last week. It's not a great situation David Beatty inherited, but he chose to inherit it. And then last week, you get the vote of confidence, whether it's the jinx, you know, that dreaded vote of confidence, and then the chancellor changes his mind in a couple weeks. So after you get that, this is how you conduct yourself as a head coach. This is, I'm going to tell you something. Whether David Beatty did or did not know his players' plan to go up and refuse to shake the hands of the Oklahoma players, that's still on David Beatty. And the fact, I think the thing that bothers me the worst of this whole situation is what David Beatty said afterwards. He made it worse to me.
Yeah.
Had he not said a word, it would have been better off. Had he been not available to the media, that might have been better. Because to me, he never apologized. I understand where they're coming from. We got to protect our grass, protect our turf. Here's an idea. Make plays.
Yeah.
You know how you can defend your turf and win a football game? Don't shrink to those levels. If anybody is associated with the University of Kansas this morning and you're not upset with the way that team presented themselves before the game in front of a couple of young children and you're all caught up in Baker's antics, then you're part of the problem. If you don't think that's an issue, once again, two wrongs don't make a right. But focus on your own backyard for a moment, KU fans. If you're brushing this off like it's no big deal, then you don't care about sportsmanship. You don't care about class, or you simply don't care about the KU football program, so it's no big deal to you. But even though KU is 1-10, even though they're 3-32 under David Beatty, whatever it might be, they still put on a uniform that says KU. They still represent the university. These young men still go out in public, and they are KU football players. Whether they hide when they go out in public and they're embarrassed to be on the team, I don't know. But they still represent the university. If they're wearing that jersey, they represent the university. And if you're a KU person out there today and you think we're making a big deal out of nothing, then you might want to revisit this situation. Because if you have any children watching that game, if you were at the game supporting the team, you cannot be happy today. And if you are, or you're just indifferent and you're blowing it off and you want to make this all about Baker Mayfield's antics, you're missing the point about your own backyard. If you're Oklahoma and you're whining and saying, well, Baker would have never done that if KU didn't do this, two wrongs don't make a right, and you should be embarrassed as a university as well. And you should, well, you, I'd say demand an apology, but Baker did the right thing. Whether it was scripted, rehearsed, or if he was told to do it, he did the right thing, and that is he got out in front of it right after the game. He apologized. He diffused the situation to a certain point, at least for his fan base, didn't he?
Oh, yeah.
What did KU do to diffuse it?
Nothing.
It's a mockery. It's ridiculous. Grow up. Of all the times to do it, two little kids are right next to you. Moving on to something more positive. That's the K-State football team. Thank God they have class. Some K-State fans gave K-State, I repeat, 0% chance of winning this game. So what chance did you give KU of beating Oklahoma if you think K-State has no chance of winning at Stillwater? What is up with some K-State fans? Have you given up on your team? There are some K-State fans, and trust me, I know they're a minority, but they're the loudest. You know this. Every fan base's loudest fans are the minority. They treat this K-State football team as if they're 1-11 like Kansas, or 1-10. Doesn't it seem that way? The sky is falling. We're 5-5. We're not going to go to a bowl, even though we have two games to play. And one's at home against Iowa State. We're not going to go to a bowl. Bill Snyder needs to go. He's old. Football's passed him by. Jim Leavitt needs to be the head coach. Bill Snyder's such a jerk for nixing that plan. All he cares about is his son. We could go on and on. I heard some similar things being said the first time Bill Snyder retired. He had two losing seasons to end his previous stint as coach at Kansas State. You know what people said? Bill can't recruit anymore. He's old. Who wants to play for an old man? Time has passed him by. Can't keep up with the Joneses. Blah, blah, blah. Those same fans, 3 years later, after Ron Prince gets pushed out or fired. Oh, welcome back, Coach Snyder. We love you. And Coach Snyder does good things right away. We love him. Fast forward a few years later. Oh, hey, we're 5-5. We thought we were going to win a national championship or go to the college football playoff or win the Big 12. Now, the Big 12 winning that was certainly maybe possible. And if you win the Big 12, it's certainly possible you could be in a college football playoff and possible you could play for a national championship. But most people figured K-State was going to be either third or second in this conference. I thought that's where they'd be. And the expectations were very high for this team going into the season. And we know K-State usually does better with the lower expectations, with a chip on their shoulder. And they're not used to handling the high expectations. But there's some K-State fans out there that act like Kansas State has lost by 40 points every game like Kansas. Going into the Oklahoma State game on Saturday, K-State was 5-5. Four of their five losses were by a touchdown or less. What does that mean? It means that K-State doesn't get blown out. They're competitive. They're in games. And when you're in games and you don't get blown out and you're within a touchdown, that means you have a chance to win. For the K-State fans out there that gave your team 0% chance to win Oklahoma State, who did you think you were playing? The 85 Bears? Alabama and Tuscaloosa? Who do you think you were playing? You weren't even playing Oklahoma. You were playing at Stillwater against Oklahoma State, who, by the way, had two losses prior to this game. Where were they played where they lost those two games, Dusty?
I think it was in Stillwater.
In Stillwater, too. TCU and Oklahoma. I don't get it. Like, listen, I'll be honest. I didn't pick K-State to win the game. That's not my contention here. I'm not saying that K-State fans should have expected a win. That's not my contention here. My contention is that there were actual K-State fans out there, I know this for a fact because one told me, that said K-State had 0% chance of winning at Stillwater. If you said that, you're not looking outside the purple sphere. That is K-State football. You're not watching other teams play football. You're not paying attention to what's happening with other programs in the Big 12. You're only worried about the Purple Nation, which is fine, but are you really a supporter of the program when you say they have 0% chance at Stillwater? Oklahoma State wasn't 11-0. Oklahoma State isn't beating teams by 40 points every game. They're not a juggernaut. They lost to TCU, got punked in their own house. They give up 62 to Oklahoma a couple weeks ago in their house. They give up 42 to Iowa State a week ago. They give up tons of points. They don't play good defense. And if you don't play good defense, you are very likely to be in games where you're going to lose. Okay? If you can't stop anybody, you're not a Big 12 championship team, which they're not. They're out now for sure. They're not a playoff team. They're not a national championship team. So even though K-State hadn't beaten Oklahoma State since 1999, K-State fans gave them 0% chance of winning this game. Now, I would have put it at 10 to 15%. I wasn't that hopeful. I'm sure you were probably about the same, maybe higher. I don't know. 10 to 15% seem fair?
Not any higher than that.
Okay. So even though Dusty and I didn't think K-State had
based
a good chance
K-State
of winning.
Situation for the most part. And then it probably would have been 15 and then went down to 10 after I heard some of the guys that we're going to be playing on Friday.
But you would have never said zero.
No.
If you want to give a 0% chance to a team to win a football game, that's KU at home against Oklahoma. You got mixed up on the schedule. That's 0%. All right? That's 0%.
I'll probably go zero next week when KU plays Oklahoma State in Stillwater.
I'll give them 1%. Maybe one. I'll give them 1% chance. K-State, Oklahoma State, to say they have zero chance is just ridiculous. And so I put on Twitter, boy, gee, college football has really passed Bill Snyder by. Wins against a top 15 team on the road with a third-string quarterback, that happens all the time. And I got tons of response on that tweet, the most I've ever gotten on a tweet in my life. I had lots of people retweeting it. A lot of people liked it. If there are K-State fans out there ripping Bill Snyder and his staff for being 5-5, and now not giving credit to the staff for winning the game at Stillwater, you can't have it both ways. If you're going to rip the coaches for a 5-5 start in the play calling, you got to commend them for being up 42-13 and winning at Stillwater. And you can whine about how the game got close at the end. Last time I checked, a win is a win, right, Dusty? 42-13 or 45-40, it's a W either way, right?
Yeah.
So there's even K-State fans want to take away from their great win because they're constantly Debbie Downer. And even though they won the game, well, God, I almost had a heart attack. There's no way we should have almost blown that game. You were the same people that said they had no chance before the game. I mean, yeah. Come on, man. 42-13, you knew Oklahoma State was going to rally. You know they're good offensively. And K-State, it's an amazing win. But to say that they had 0% chance of winning was just foolish. I mean, there's no other way to describe it. When you say a 0% chance of win, that means you say they have no chance. No chance whatsoever. K-State, what, the last four times they've gone to Stillwater, it's come down to the final minutes?
Well, they've had leads, I'm pretty sure, at some point during the game. And, yeah, it's come down to the last, and they usually can't finish it off. But they never had a 42-13 lead.
No.
I can promise you that.
The spread was 20-21, and we both said right away, without even hesitating, K-State will cover.
Oh, yeah.
Because K-State plays competitive football. They don't lose. Now, we do say that good teams or great teams find ways to win close games, and bad teams or below-average teams find ways to lose those games. And in fairness, K-State had lost four games, 7 points or less. They found a way not to finish. Well, they did finally finish against Oklahoma State, even though it got a bit hairy at the end. But consider what they had to go through to win this game. And if you can't give Bill Snyder and his staff credit, as a K-State fan, if you cannot give him credit or want to poo-poo what he did, then you got to look and you got to start to wonder, are you really a K-State football fan or are you a Bill Snyder hater? Is that fair?
It's fair. I had a long discussion with a Bill Snyder hater the other night, so it's fair.
K-State had no DJ Reed, no Dalton Schoen, a third-string quarterback, even had the four-string, that's right, a four-string quarterback had to play just a little while, Hunter Hall. Byron Pringle had an amazing game, and you have to sit here and say, where's this been? Why
That's
haven't we seen it?
That's the part of the game that was infuriating for me.
Even though he finally helped you win a game,
it's
infuriating.
When they got up 42-13, yeah. And he had four touchdowns, I'm like, where has this been all year?
Yeah.
Like, what? You're not dropping anything. Of course, they only threw to him four times.
Yes.
He caught everything, and it went for touchdowns
yes.
all but once.
Yes.
That's the infuriating part of that game.
Four catches, 166 yards. He looked like an All-American.
See, I didn't enjoy it.
He returned a kick up 89 yards for a touchdown. He was what KU State thought he'd be all year long. The victory snapped the 14-game losing streak to ranked opponents and gave K-State its first victory over a top 10 team since 2012, its first win in Stillwater since 1999. And more importantly, it makes them bowl eligible with a 6-5 record, and it knocks Oklahoma State out of Big 12 championship contention. And this goes to show you, and I truly believe this, and I know K-State was up 42-13 with 5:22 to go, and it got a little bit hairy at the end. But I want to say that there were distractions this week. There were distractions. With the whole Jim Leavitt story coming for Brett McMurphy, there were distractions. And Bill Snyder can act all coy, and he can basically lie to us afterwards saying he doesn't know who Brett McMurphy is. I'm going to say baloney on that one, okay? Bill, come on. We're not that dumb. But having said that, this team and these players could have easily packed it in before this game. Losing to West Virginia, reading the social media boards, hearing about how their coach is too old, hearing about how nobody can make calls right and the staff needs to go, hearing about Jim Leavitt should be the next head coach at Kansas State. All these things, all the noise, and trust me, the players hear it. They read it, they see it. and then told that they're not going to make a bowl. They're 5-5. They can't win any of their next two games. They go to Stillwater. They have no chance. And guess what? You helped them, because they then played with a chip on their shoulder, which has been missing at times this year. Previous K-State teams have a chip on their shoulder. This team really hasn't, because there was those expectations they were going to be one of the best in the Big 12. They play with a chip on their shoulder. They go in with the world against them, and it's amazing what teams do. And then they rally, I think, for their coach as well, because the distraction all week long and about Bill Snyder needs to go and Jim Levitt needs to come in and Bill nixed the whole thing with Jim Levitt coaching waiting. Trust me, the players are aware of it. You'd have to live under a rock not to know what's going on. And I think the players flat out said, you know what? Even some of our own fan base don't even think we have a chance. Let's go prove them wrong. And they had a chip on their shoulder, not just against the rest of the Big 12 in America. It was against some of their own fan base. If that's what it takes to get motivated, instead of, listen, this is the difference between K-State and KU right now. Well, there's lots of differences. KU's way of trying to get fired up is to refuse shaking the hand of Baker Mayfield at midfield before a game. K-State's way of getting motivated is probably reading these things, hearing about these things, and then going out and walking the walk and playing good, playing well. And they went out and spanked Oklahoma State for 2.5 quarters and then held on and won. That was a tremendous win. It makes them bowl eligible. And if you saw the locker room afterward, this is not a team that was quitting on the season. And once again, I'm going to tell you right now, the persona and personality of a team takes on their coach, in my opinion, or coaching staff. And the way KU acted the other day was a reflection of David Beatty. And the way K-State went out and played against Oklahoma State is a reflection of Bill Snyder and his staff. And that's why the Kansas State football program is eons above eons better than the KU football program, which is obvious. KU is one of the worst in all of America. But this is how you go about and make a statement. You don't put your hands behind your back and refuse to shake somebody's hand. You go out and you play. You make plays. Byron Pringle, have yourself a day. Skylar Thompson, have yourself a day. K-State defense, until the last quarter, basically, have yourself a day. And let's give them credit. They got to stop at the end of the game when they had to. And I think a lot of K-State fans, even then, were still saying K-State had no chance of winning, even though they're up 5. All the things against K-State, this game, all of it, and they still won at Stillwater, a place they haven't won since 1999. You've got to just put your hands together and say, hell of an effort, boys. Great job. And now you're going to go to a bowl. And I've thought all along it could be Bill Snyder's last home game against Iowa State this weekend. I've thought all along they're going to beat Iowa State and still be bowl eligible. I didn't think they beat Oklahoma State. I know you didn't either. Not did many people. We at least gave them a chance. Now they could be 7-5. Go win a bowl game. Now they're 8-5. K-State fans still think Bill Snyder needs to quit? It's amazing what a few wins can do.
You don't want to know the answer to that question for most of them that think he needs to quit right now, because that's past. Like, with this season,
they've jumped off the ship and they're never getting back on.
Exactly.
Is that what you're saying?
7-5 is not 10-2 like a lot of people thought they could do this
Which
year.
Was that unrealistic, though, 10-2?
I don't think it was.
Okay.
Right. I really don't think it was, based on what they had coming back and what they were able to do last year. And they've had some things go against them this year.
Sure. Injuries at the quarterback
can't say
position.
That at the, can't say that at the Vanderbilt game. No. They pretty much had all hands on deck in that game.
Yes.
And laid an egg.
And I put
question.
That. And I do put that loss on the coaching
and
staff.
That's and I think that's part of the reason why those people jumped off and aren't coming back.
Sure.
We want that. And I'm guilty of it. I just said it. Mm-hmm. When we started talking about this, what's infuriating about this team? I'm not one of the guys that thinks Bill Snyder needs to leave, needs to be fired, needs to be pushed out, anything like that. But I understand where the people are coming from that do say those kind of things.
Sure.
My side of it is more of the game's not passed him by. He's too loyal to his guys.
That's my
side of it.
I would agree.
Give me a different OC, a different DC, different coordinators that come in here and can, like, spice this thing up a little bit.
Yeah.
And change things up a little bit, because clearly that's needed at times. That's my side of the Bill Snyder thing. It's not the way he coaches, the way he runs his program, all the in-between stuff there. It's stop being so loyal to all these guys that maybe their schemes have passed the game by.
Could be.
Maybe they don't fit with what you're trying to do anymore. Maybe every time the quarterback runs the football, And the K-State fans are just like holding their breath so he doesn't get hurt again, and continuously drawing up designed quarterback run plays. But at the same time, I sit here and think, well, we've always had success with that.
Yeah. Got a guy named Colin Klein.
We had success with that on Saturday, too.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, it didn't end in success at the end of the game when Thompson went down. Seems like he's going to be okay. But it's just one of those things that's like it's a double-edged sword, because you need to do it to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
If you stop doing it, where are you at? Are you running Wildcat the rest of the time with Barnes or Warmack or something? I mean, but that's basically what Alex Delton was.
Right.
And so I don't know where you put that. And that's the angst with K-State fans with Bill Snyder.
Sure.
It's like, is it Bill Snyder's fault, or is it Dana Dimel's fault? Is it Bill Snyder for being too loyal to Dana Dimel?
Sure.
And I think it's more of that than anything that the games pass Bill Snyder by.
I agree with you. And you know, when I look at Kansas State, I think, and like I said, like we've been critical of the coaching staff and the play calling. We've been critical on this show. And I think they did a lot to lose the game against Vanderbilt. I think that game kind of set the tone going into the Big 12 season, to be honest with you. It's a game I thought they were very vanilla on offense, and they could have easily won the game. And I didn't think Vanderbilt was that good of a team. But having said all
that's
that,
shown to be true.
It has been, yes. But in fairness, now, you know, when you go to Stillwater, the play calling, I think, was better. They stretched the field. It helps when your receivers make catches. Skylar Thompson.
Helps when you got a quarterback who can make those throws.
Well, that's
too.
What I was going to say. K-State's got to adjust their play calling. You wouldn't have Alex Delton make those same throws that they had Skylar Thompson make, because they're different quarterbacks. And so it might take Dana Dimel and the coaching staff a game or two or longer to find the things that fit Skylar Thompson, because he's a different player than Alex Delton. And Alex Delton's a different player than Jesse Ertz. And in fairness to Kansas State, there's not a lot of programs in America that are on their third-string quarterback that are bowl eligible, who just won on the road against a top 15 team that was a Big 12 championship contender. Can you name me another program in the country that has done that?
No, but I don't know if I can name you another program in the country whose third-string quarterback is better than their first two.
Well...
You know what I've been saying about Skylar Thompson this year.
I know, but you're not. He was never going to win the job from Ertz.
I know that.
And in fairness to Jesse Ertz, I mean, he's been hurt most of the year. He might have had a great, great year. He had a really good year last year, in fairness to Jesse.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to say that Jesse's just a terrible quarterback.
Right. But the end of their career, Skylar Thompson will have the better career.
Yeah, I mean, intangible skills and things that you can eye test is an easy way to tell.
Oh, yeah.
And there is no question that Skylar Thompson – with as young as he is and what he has to build on is way above both of those guys.
No, I agree.
As a full package quarterback.
Oh, I agree. And he should be a quarterback until he gets hurt the rest of his career. Unless he struggles. I mean, maybe, you know, one win doesn't make a career.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't have a great game last week against West Virginia.
But it was his first career start.
You could see these things.
Well, like
there's only one play that I can think of that he made. And, I mean, he looked down his receiver and got picked.
And it's going to happen.
And that's especially late in the game where you're trying to make plays to get back into this. And, you know, some of that leaves you as far as your progressions and things like that when you have that pressure on you trying to get down there and get a win. So, you know, he's a freshman. I'm going to give him a little bit of a pass on a deal like that.
The two-point throw he made at Texas Tech was just fantastic.
Yeah.
And that right there showed me, I was like, whew, this guy should start the rest of the year. After just seeing that throw, I was convinced.
Yeah.
So I'm with you. Here's Skyler on winning first time as a starter at K-State.
Really, there was a moment where I was stepping out there today and I'm like, wow, like, this is really, like, it's here. Like, I did it, but I try not to get caught up in the moment too much. But it's truly a feeling that I can't describe to you guys.
So congratulations to Kansas State. And if you're a KU football fan today, and I'm not trying to be mean to KU football, it's just they've presented that to everybody. And this is how there's one way of doing it, and K-State's way of doing it's a lot better than KU's way of doing it. And KU football sunk, I thought, to an all-new low when they did and resorted to those tactics before the game. And so I think, you know, it's like night and day between the two programs, not only on the field, but how things are handled. I don't think I would ever see a Bill Snyder football team have anybody do what KU did before the game, not shaking hands. Do you think that would ever happen under Bill Snyder's team? I mean, I know it's possible.
He'd have some different words after the game than David Beatty did, I can guarantee
you. Exactly.
guaranteed.
Even Mark Mangino was critical of, and Mark Mangino wasn't exactly the nicest guy. You
remember
could actually
when he
see
called
him
the
condoning
guy a hot dog
it.
On the sideline and just like went after him. Yeah. Oh my goodness.
Mark Mangino has been kicked out of his own kids' high school games for crying out loud. He thought it was poor sportsmanship. What does that tell you when a guy that's been kicked out of high school football games, Mark Mangino, thinks it was bad sportsmanship by KU and doesn't condone it at all and thought it was really bad? That should tell you something, David Beatty. And once again, David Beatty and the football team should apologize to everybody associated with KU athletics, and not only KU athletics, people associated with KU and their university across the country. They should step up and issue an apology. That's just my opinion. You don't have to agree with it if you're a KU fan out there. You might think we're making mountains out of molehills, but it does show a lack of discipline, and it also shows a lack of class and sportsmanship. And if you can lose and you lose and you lose, what do you have left? Well, your dignity, perhaps class. Definitely lacking in one of those areas after that game, if not both. I don't know.
Well, the dignity was gone quite some time
probably
ago,
so.
I think.
Probably so. Big 12 games, Texas beat West Virginia 28-14. TCU beat Texas Tech 27-3. Iowa State got by Baylor 23-13. K-State over Oklahoma State 45-40, as we said. OU over KU 41-3. That means TCU and Oklahoma, Big 12 title game, right?
Yeah,
automatic,
I mean,
now.
You can't think of any other reason why.
Like, how can it not
else
be?
Different would happen.
O-State lost. They have three losses in conference. And West Virginia, well, I guess TCU has two. Technically.
See, but they've got a tiebreaker on Iowa State.
Well, no, Iowa State has it on
them,
TCU.
So Iowa State beat.
But TCU has over Oklahoma State. So what has to happen? So technically that's not given yet.
TCU has, but they've just got.
They have two conference losses.
Got two.
And Oklahoma State has three.
Yeah.
And so does West Virginia. Or no, yeah, that's right. So what has to happen to make it complicated is TCU lose at home to Baylor. Anybody think that's happening?
All right, just stop.
Now, wait a minute. Are you going to give zero? Are you going to give 0% chance on
no,
that
it's
one?
No, not 0%. Chance,
okay,
keep right, going.
I'll give Baylor 2% chance, and then Oklahoma State has to beat Kansas, which we figure that'll happen, and West Virginia would have to win at Oklahoma to have the logjam.
Oklahoma,
West Virginia. I think they're out of it. Iowa State at K-State. Iowa State. No, they're not in part of it either. I think it's still West Virginia. Iowa State. I think's out of it. But anyway, it's a little bit complicated. But the point is, TCU would have to lose to Baylor, and then Oklahoma State, and I think West Virginia have to win to make it complicated. And it doesn't look like that's going to happen.
No.
And I'd have to look closer. West Virginia might actually be out of it. Possibly. I don't know. So as long as TCU wins, it's TCU Oklahoma. Oklahoma can lose their last game. It doesn't matter. They're in. They've already clinched their spot in the Big 12 title game. So the Big 12 spared some embarrassment there, perhaps. And they will be their guaranteed 1-2. Yay! Good job, Big 12. All right. Something not so positive, Nebraska football. If you didn't watch the Nebraska Penn State game and you saw the final score, you probably thought, well, that's not bad. 56-44, that's not bad. Man, it must have hung in there, did a good job. All right, I'm proud to be a Husker. Do you know what the score was at halftime?
I don't. I know what the score was at the end of the first quarter, but
42-10.
I didn't write down the halftime score.
I believe Penn State took the foot off the gas just a little bit. 42-10 was the score at halftime. Tanner Lee threw for 399 yards and three touchdowns. They outscored Penn State by three touchdowns in the second half. That's the lead on Husker.com. Woo-hoo. Start with the positive.
Got up 10-7 and outscored them by three touchdowns in the second half. What happened in between there? We don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, you know, forget the fact Penn State scored 35 unanswered in the first half. That you take those 35 points away, Dusty, and Nebraska wins. Okay, Mike Riley, I heard today there's going to be a watch party, eat ice cream and cake, and wish Mike Riley well. Post-game party after the Iowa game, I've heard, is online.
Have a farewell party for Mike Riley.
Yeah,
that's awful nice of him.
Isn't it, though?
Yeah.
Iowa's, I think, a 4.5-point favorite against Nebraska coming up later this week. Is that on Friday, I think?
I'm pretty sure.
I would guess Mike Riley will be gone Saturday, if not the end of Friday. Top 25 poll is out in college football. No big changes. Alabama 1, Miami 2, Oklahoma 3, Clemson 4, Wisconsin 5, Auburn in 6. Any big changes? Oklahoma State drops all the way to 18 from 10. In the poll, Oklahoma State was 13th when it came to the college football playoff rankings. Do you expect any different things, not different things, but changes in the top four tonight at all? To me, the only change could be Oklahoma jumping Miami from 4-3. I don't think Miami can jump Clemson from 3-2. They should have done that last week if they were going
to
do it.
There's a better chance for Wisconsin to jump Miami than Miami to jump Clemson, I think.
Do you think Wisconsin jumps Oklahoma? Oklahoma's got one loss. Miami doesn't have any.
I mean, because they strengthened their
Yeah, they did.
if you call a win over the 24th ranked team in the country, that's not as good as what they should be, probably.
Overrated is what they are.
But, I mean, they strengthened it with the win.
I think it'll stay the same.
I think it will, too.
I don't think anything will change. A lot of blowouts. They had the cupcake schedule for the SEC and Clemson, too. And yeah. I just think they'll be lazy. And the committee took a week off sipping margaritas and Mai Tais on the beach. Said no need to change it.
Yeah.
Top five will stay the same. That's my feeling. I might be wrong. But, I mean, Miami wasn't very convincing. Oklahoma played against a horrible team. I don't think you can jump Oklahoma just because they beat Kansas. And Miami still won. So if you have it that way last week, I don't think there's enough to change it this week. But I've all along said it's Alabama 1, Clemson 2, Oklahoma's ahead of Miami. And I know you have Oklahoma ahead of Miami. And then Wisconsin's sitting there at 5.
Yeah.
And once again, if Wisconsin runs the table and goes undefeated, they beat Ohio State in the Big Ten title game, they'll be in. Mark my words, they'll be in. So they can control their own path, as I like to call it. All right, the Chiefs, we talked about it. We opened the show. They're the great pretender. The great pretender. So many things that are wrong with the Chiefs right now. I don't even know where to begin, but let's hear the good call at the end of the game. The exciting, well, Mitch makes it exciting, but it wasn't exciting for the Chiefs.
So Rosas
this isn't
will right. try a 23-yard field goal from the middle of the field, this to win the game in overtime. Wing the hold. Diassi with the snap. It's clean. Kick on its way, and it is good. And the Giants have upset the Kansas City Chiefs in overtime, 12-9.
You know, it's funny. I was worried about this game. Now, I didn't pick the Chiefs to lose, but I certainly wouldn't have given the Giants 0% chance of winning.
No.
Not in the NFL.
I don't give anybody 0% chance in the NFL ever.
I agree.
Even the Browns.
Now, the thing that gave me solace was that they had a bye week. And Andy's great with bye weeks. And I thought, well, that would be a chance to counter-adjust and make some adjustments. Well, I think the Chiefs' offense adjusted. I'll give them that. They adjusted back to the way they played offense last year. And that's just mind-boggling to me. You know you have a bad defense. And now finally your defense steps up and then your offense decides to go super conservative. Oh, except for that one trick play, which was a great play call again by Andy. Andy, you're so cute. Yes, you are. You're so cute. Trick play with Tyreek Hill, change the momentum of a game against Denver. They were fortunate they were playing Denver that night, or they might have lost that game. 6:36 to go in the game. It's a 6-6 tie. Chiefs got a first down. They could have milked the clock, went down, kicked the field goal. The way they've been going, it was taking a lot of time to move the ball down the field. Not a lot of possessions in the game, so you got to cherish each one, make each one count. And then they decided to run a trick play, throw it out to Travis Kelce, because, you know, Travis Kelce played high school quarterback in his day, so that obviously makes him qualified to throw a pass with 6 minutes to go in an NFL game in a 6-6 tie. So he throws a beautiful spiral, excellent spiral. Unfortunately, it's picked off by a man in blue, and that ended that. I wish I could be at a Chiefs press conference. And here's the question I would ask Andy Reid today. What does it say about your faith in your quarterback that with 6:36 to go on the road and a 6-6 tie, you have more faith in Travis Kelce throwing the ball deep down the field, stretching the field, than your starting quarterback? That would be my question. Why do you feel more comfortable with Travis Kelce throwing the ball and heaving it down the field in a 6-6 game with 6 minutes to go in the fourth quarter than Alex Smith? That play in itself, to me, is a super indictment of Alex Smith. Alex Smith's had a really good year, and I like Alex Smith. And I am convinced today, and I've been convinced for a while, but yesterday made it even more so, that Alex Smith has been programmed by Andy Reid. And Alex Smith is not going to change a call that Andy Reid sends in. There were plays last year where he was supposed to lock on the receiver. It was a one-option route in the end zone. What quarterback has those instructions if they're a really good quarterback? It's ridiculous. There's no excuse for the Chiefs losing yesterday. There is absolutely none. That is one of the worst losses the Chiefs have had from a Chiefs team that's a playoff contender in all the years I've watched the Chiefs play. It's worse than the 0-10 loss to the Raiders a few years ago on Thursday Night Football. At least you could say a short week and this and that, and it's a rivalry game. What's your excuse on this one? The Giants dropped passes, unsportsmanlike penalties. They missed an extra point. The Giants weren't even trying to win. Three turnovers. The old famous little shovel pass to the tight end. That's so cute. That results in an interception. You think teams might catch on to that? Yes, they do. Even the bad Giants caught on to it. The penalties, every time they did get a decent play, it was called back due to penalty. Pass interference. Steven Nelson gets hurt late in the game, and then we bring in Philip Gaines, who, you know, can't cover anything. Encroachment in overtime gave him a free 5 yards. Didn't the Chiefs have a bye week? Because it looked like they were on a bye yesterday.
Yeah.
They suppose they're going to fix all these things during the bye week. Isn't that what Andy told us, right? Right, to the media?
Well, that's usually what
it's his responsibility. Yeah. His responsibility. And in an overtime, I love this one. You're in overtime, touchdown wins the game. You can just go ahead and not put it in the hands of your defense. So in overtime, you get a first down. Then you had a good game, but there's a holding penalty. I think it was on Tardif. So it brings you back. So now you have second and 12. Against the Giants defense, this ranks 31st out of 32 in the National Football League. Did you know that? 31st. Chiefs have this great offense, correct? Have these weapons with Kelce and Hill. But we wouldn't want to throw it deep down any of those guys. So on second and 12 in overtime, a touchdown wins the game. Andy Reid calls for a bubble screen. Pretty conservative.
I hate bubble screens.
I do too. Third and 10 in overtime. The Giants rush three. That's what the Chiefs like to do, right? The Giants rush three. And I replayed and I paused and I replayed it multiple times. Third and 10. Alex Smith has plenty of time. In fact, Ian Eagle, even says, Smith with plenty of time. And Smith, after 2 seconds, with no pressure, panics, and what does he do? Mr. Checkdown checks down to Chikandrick West on 3rd and 10. No pass rush. That's why people want Pat Mahomes instead of Alex Smith. That's why. My question is, you put Patrick Mahomes into the game, and the first time he changes a play that Andy Reid doesn't like, because I think Patrick Mahomes got the guts to do it, and he might make a great play down the field. Andy still might not like it because it wasn't his call. There's a lot of ego involved here. A lot of ego. And I've said all along, Andy Reid needs to quit calling plays. I know he has this massive playbook. I get it. And I know he's had some great games where he's called some great contests. But defenses have either figured him out or he has decided to go super conservative. We called this after they beat the Patriots. You, me, and Chad. All three of us said it. Are the Chiefs a Super Bowl contender? Well, this helps. But what are they going to do throughout the year? Are they going to go for the kill shot? Are they going to still stretch the ball down the field? Or are they going to go to the dink and dink offense? The dink and drop it off, check down. Tony Dungy last night said exactly what I think all Chiefs fans have known for a while. He says, why doesn't Andy Reid let Alex Smith loose? First 5 games, he let him throw the ball down the field. Now it's dink and dunk. He's went back to the old offense. Dink and dunk. Let Alex Smith go is what Tony Dungy said. And I agree with him 1,000%. Why not go down firing? Instead of being super conservative and playing not to lose the game, here's an idea. Play to win the game. They did that against the Patriots. They try to do that against the best teams or teams they think are better than them, in my opinion. But when they play teams they don't think is as good as them, they think they're so good, the Chiefs, that they don't have to be aggressive. That they can just... don't turn the ball over. We'll be fine. Third and 10. Let's not take an extra 2 seconds to look down the field, Alex. If you don't have it in 2 seconds, just check it down to your running back, Chikandrick West. With the defense the Chiefs have, they cannot run that type of offense. And lost in the whole thing is the Chiefs defense actually played pretty well yesterday, but the problem is the Giants aren't very good. They're missing all their starting wide receivers. Their starting running back of the season is out. They have tons of injuries, and you could argue they don't even care anymore. And the Chiefs defense did what they had to do. I don't put that on the defense. I put this on Andy Reid. I put it on the Chiefs players. I put it on the offense. I put it on Alex Smith. I spread the blame completely around here. They've lost 4 of their last 5. Luckily, the Raiders got beat again. They still have a 2-game lead in the division, but the Chargers are coming on. The Chiefs might be able to go 9-7 to win this division. But the chances of home field advantage went bye-bye yesterday.
Oh, that's over.
And I would say if chances of a first-round bye went bye-bye yesterday, They're going to be playing at Jacksonville. No, not Jacksonville, if they win the division. They'll probably be playing home against Tennessee or home against maybe Buffalo. Who knows? I don't know. But they're going to be playing at home and have to play in the first round if they win their division. They'll be the 4 seed or the 3 seed. Right now, Jacksonville's ahead. The Chiefs are the 4 seed right now in the AFC after starting 5-0. Since the end of the third quarter at Oakland, the Chiefs' offense has managed 3 touchdowns in 13 quarters plus overtime yesterday. 3 touchdowns, and one of those was the throw it to Tyreek and let everybody block for him, which was fluky. The Giants give up 26 points a game. The Giants gave up 31 to the 49ers and C.J. Beathard the week before, and the Chiefs can manage 9 points, including overtime? 3 field goals is all you can do? 3 times inside the 15. Can't score a touchdown. If Andy Reid's so innovative and so awesome at offense, why can't the Chiefs do anything in the red zone? Is it because he doesn't trust his quarterback?
Yeah, that's part of it. There's no question.
I think it is.
I don't think there's any question that that's part of it.
This team looked poor on offense. Shovel passes, bubble screens. I love the cuteness. It's awesome, but it gets old. It might work for a little while. Teams adjust. It's time for Andy Reid to adjust. He had a whole bye week to adjust. He did not. In fact, he adjusted, but he adjusted the wrong way. He went super conservative for the most part, except for the Kelsey trick play. And he went back to the way the Chiefs played in the Pittsburgh Steelers game in the playoffs last year. We'll take our 3 points. We don't want to risk anything here. Let's just check down on 3rd and 10. Maybe our defense will stop the Giants. Even the hapless Giants could score on the Chiefs' defense with 6 minutes to go in the ball in overtime. Thanks to Philip Gaines going in, playing corner. Because the Chiefs don't have any depth at corner, obviously, after Steven Nelson and Marcus Peters. Whose fault is that? Yeah, I think we know. It's the organization's fault, not necessarily Andy Reid's. The other thing that should be pointed out, no Albert Wilson, no Chris Conley. Wilson's been banged up. Conley's out for the season. Perhaps those two receivers meant more to this offense than people want to say.
I think Albert Wilson did. I think he's shown that.
I think Chris Conley did because he's a possession receiver and a big target.
And he was coming into his own.
He was a third down threat.
But people like to make fun of the Chiefs for having Albert Wilson as their number two receiver or whatever. You can't deny that the dude made some plays. Like,
yes, he did.
And when you take that away and then take Conley away, because that was the funny thing, like yesterday the Fouts and Eagle were talking about how the Giants' wide receiver core was depleted. And they are.
Yeah,
there's no question about that.
They don't have a Hill or a Kelsey.
But they were acting like the Chiefs like had all these studs still at that position.
Well, they had the two big ones.
They do. But after that,
right,
they're depleted at receiver too. I mean, none of those guys have really proved themselves outside of that. And I'm not trying to compare and say that they're like the Giants. They're not. But it's not like the Chiefs' wide receiver core is just solid and stacked right now. Because it's not.
No.
It's not at all.
It was a bad loss, and I guess, there's the sad thing. If they can lose to the Giants, they can lose to anybody on the rest of the schedule.
Well, yeah.
There are people saying they'll go 7-0. It's an easy schedule, 6-1. A few people on Sports Talk Radio in Kansas City a few weeks ago said the Chiefs can't even lose this division if they tried. Suddenly they're changing their tune. They're lucky that the division's bad right now. Could they be in any other division, they would be looking at a wild card possibly. And it still could happen. We still got 6 games to play. I think the Chiefs could go 4-2 in the last 6 and still win this division easily. Because the Broncos have 7 losses. The Chargers find a way to lose games. They were helped out because the Bills threw 5 picks with their new quarterback, which was a silly decision to change quarterbacks on a playoff team at 5-4. Bench Tyrod Taylor, only threw 3 picks all year, put in a rookie who threw 5 picks in the first half. Chargers were gift-wrapped that game.
Yeah.
They're 4-6. The Raiders got blown out by the Patriots. They're 4-6. Raiders do have the tiebreaker of the Chiefs. And believe it or not, the Raiders are 4-6, only 1 game out of the playoff race. Did you know that? Whole bunch of 5-5 teams and 4-6 teams all have a chance to get that wild card spot in the AFC. Listen, this is simple. There are 3 really good teams in the National Football League. That's the Philadelphia Eagles, the New England Patriots, and the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think the Vikings and Saints are right behind. I was watching that Eagle game last night against the Cowboys. I almost put it on Twitter, but I didn't. Carson Wentz wears number 11. Alex Smith wears number 11. Carson Wentz is a lot like Alex Smith, except he's younger, obviously, a second-round player. Who's the head coach of Philadelphia?
Doug Peterson,
who was offensive coordinator for Andy Reid. What type of offense do the Eagles run? It's the same offense the Chiefs run, except they do things a little bit differently. Here's one big difference. Carson Wentz, he's trusted by his coach, and he's a second-year quarterback. He lets Carson Wentz throw the ball down the field. I'll tell you right now, the Chiefs have a better, counting Hill and Kelsey, the Chiefs have a better core of receivers than the Eagles do. Or at least they have more weapons than the Eagles do. You could argue Kareem Hunt's better than anything the Eagles have in the backfield as well. So Carson Wentz, I would argue he has less offensive weapons than Alex Smith does. Now, he might have a better offensive line. There's no question he has a better defense for Philadelphia. They can get to the quarterback without blitzing. They've got a good defensive line. But Carson Wentz, I'm watching him last night, and here's the big difference between Carson Wentz and Alex Smith. And I don't see there's any reason why Alex Smith couldn't have been like Carson Wentz. That's what's frustrating to me. Alex Smith could have been like Carson Wentz until he got a lobotomy, I guess, and became a robot. Because Alex Smith, as soon as he feels any pressure, and there's a lot of times he feels it when it's not there, what does he do? It's called happy feet. He takes off. He doesn't allow himself to look downfield as long as he should. Whether he doesn't trust his offensive line, I don't know. And then he tries to run for a first down, and he puts his body in peril. Carson Wentz last night had a play, and he's done this multiple times I've seen him this year, where the pocket's breaking down, and he hangs in there for an extra second or two before he bolts out. He at least gives a chance to look downfield and make a play. So the difference between Carson Wentz and Alex Smith, Wentz has a stronger arm. Wentz is younger, but Smith has much more experience. Doug Peterson trusts Carson Wentz a lot more than Andy Reid trusts Alex Smith. Carson Wentz has less weapons than Alex Smith does, but Carson Wentz isn't afraid to stay in the pocket, and he doesn't want to check it down. He will, but he wants to at least exhaust his options before checking it down. And I go back to the final play in overtime for the Chiefs offense, and I put that play on Alex Smith. You need 10 yards. You have no pressure. You start the roll because you just roll because you have happy feet, and you throw it to a guy for 3 yards. Andy Dalton is one of those type of game manager quarterbacks, although he'll throw it down to A.J. Green more often than not.
Yeah.
He had a game this year, I'm not kidding you, on 4th and 7, pretty sure it was Andy Dalton. Might have been somebody else, but I thought it was Dalton. He rolled right on a 4th and 7 late in the game where the Bengals had to convert to keep the game going. He rolled right, threw the ball out of bounds on purpose, and then put his hands on his head because he realized, I'm a robot. Oh, yeah. 4th and 7, our last drive of the game. Oh, yeah. I can't throw it out of bounds on purpose.
Oh, yeah.
I got to risk hurting my stats and throw a pick. Dak Prescott last night threw three picks, I think. But here's the difference between him and Alex Smith. Dak Prescott last night, his team was down, I think, 29-7. He was rolling right. It was 4th down. Alex Smith probably would have tried to run for it so he didn't throw a pick, would have thrown it short, safe pass, hoped the guy would run it in for 5 yards out. They're from about the 15-yard line. Dak Prescott rolls right. He's about ready to get sacked, which means what? Turnover on downs. He decides, I'm just going to throw it over the middle. It was a horrible pass, but he had to throw it. It's 4th down. Yeah. Just throw it in there. And it looks bad on his stats because it was his 3rd interception. But what if the ball gets tipped and goes to a receiver for a touchdown? What if his receiver comes out of nowhere, dives, and makes the catch? At least Dak Prescott threw the ball in the end zone, so there's a chance they could score a touchdown on 4th down. 3rd down and 10 in overtime. And you're checking down to Chikandrick West with no pressure? That's that mentality that has been that way for Alex Smith a big portion of his career. And that's why all of us here on this show said after the Patriot game, let's hold on and put the brakes on Alex Smith being a great quarterback. Let's see what he does and what Andy Reid calls when they have to win games and have a chance to put teams away. What are they going to do? Are they going to go for the kill shot? The Broncos, they did not, because they knew they were better. They just played not to lose. And yesterday they did the exact same thing, and playing not to lose cost them the game. Disagree?
No. I don't even know if I call that playing not to lose. They just played like garbage. Like
hot garbage?
It wasn't even hot.
It wasn't even hot garbage.
Yeah, it might have been hot.
Okay.
I've seen the Chiefs play not to lose, and that was way beyond that.
They played against the 1-8 team, waiting for the 1-8 team to totally gift wrap it.
Yeah.
They tried. They really, really tried hard. That's a horrible loss. That's just no other way to describe it. Okay, Martin Truex, I'll let you go grab over there. Martin Truex wins the championship in NASCAR, and he deserved it. He should be the winner because he was the best race car driver by far all year long. He won his eighth race of the season, winning at Homestead.
Martin Truex Jr., Kyle Busch running 1 and 2. For the final time, they'll go down the backstretch. Martin Truex Jr., 12 years in the Cup Series, and his roller coaster career is finally reaching the peak. Putting an exclamation point on a near-perfect season. Martin Truex Jr. is the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series champion.
A lot of it was for me. A lot of it was for this team. It's just, I don't even know what to say. We just never gave up all day long. We didn't have the best car. I don't know how we won that thing. Never give up, dig deep. I told my guys we were going to dig deeper than we ever have today. And 20 to go, I thought I was done. They were all better than me in the long run all day long. And I just found a way. I found a lane that I could use. And I found a lane that was blocking enough of their air that they couldn't use it. And it was just made it happen. I can't believe it. I've wanted this since I was a little kid. And just never give up, man. Never give up on your dreams no matter what happens.
Well, quite the story. Martin Truex Jr. winning the championship in NASCAR, well-deserved. And the season's so long in NASCAR, I think their first race of next season starts in 2 weeks. Okay, I'm joking. It's not quite that soon. College basketball, KU men rolled into South Dakota State on Friday night. So KU back in action coming up on, I believe it's tomorrow night, 6:30 pregame on Z96.3 Lake against Texas Southern. K-State back in action tomorrow night as well. And Wichita State is in the Maui Invitational, play at 4 o'clock against Cal tonight.